You're listening to the Net Mums podcast with me, Wendy Gollidge.
And me, Alison Perry. Coming up on this week's show...
It's when we're losing weight because we feel that we have to look a certain way because of the media and all this toxicity that we've been fed from pretty much the day we were born. That's when it's a problem.
But before all of that...
It's a new series. It's a new year. Do you feel like a brand new you, Alison?
This feels like an advert for like vitamins or something.
Or sanitary towels.
Something. Do you know what? I don't. And I feel like there's so much pressure at this time of year to reinvent ourselves. And it really bugs me because it just makes me a bit panicky and a bit like, I need to be, you know... having like a brand new exercise regime and be eating healthily and be organized and buy notebooks and do bullet journaling and it just switches me off entirely. How about you, Wendy? Do you feel like you should be improving your life in some way?
I'm really torn. On the one hand, I think January is the worst possible time in the world ever to do anything because it's miserable and crap and all you want to do is be cozy. And I try every year not to make any resolutions. And then I get swept up in it. And then I fail like everyone else. So this year, I'm just going to make a long list of things that I would like to have achieved by the 1st of January 2026. And if I get to the end of the year and I've achieved a couple, I reckon that's okay.
I think you should do what I do. So when I'm making a to-do list on a daily basis, I always put things on that I've already done so that I can tick them off. So you should put things on your list that you've already achieved and have that feeling of satisfaction. But I'm pretty sure that our guest today will have had a thing or two to say about this. What do you reckon?
Tell our lovely listeners who we're chatting to today. They will definitely have an opinion on this.
Well, I'm so excited to have these ladies on today. I have followed them both on Instagram for ages. We are joined by Lottie Drynan and Laura Adlington. Now, Laura, you might remember from Great British Bake Off back in 2020. And since then, she has become a body confidence advocate and plus size content creator. Her book, Diet Starts Monday, and podcast, Go Love Yourself, has brought her thousands of fans. Lottie, meanwhile, is a self-esteem, body image and mental health advocate, talking about her own struggles with disordered eating and IBS on a journey to self-acceptance. Together, Laura and Lottie are hitting the stage with Same Dress, Different Bodies Live at the London Palladium in March. Ladies, welcome to the Net Mums podcast.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Thank you.
You are very welcome. So tell us then, let's start where we started. What do you think of New Year's resolutions? Helpful and a nice way to make adjustments, or just something to beat yourself up about in the urge to be perfect?
I mean, I've got ADHD, so I'm very easily overwhelmed. So I say no. Like, I do agree with you, Alison. Writing a list, I always do that. I'm obsessed with like the tick lists on Apple, and I always put at least four things and go, yeah, already done that this morning. Like, shower, done.
Perfect. Get dressed, have breakfast.
Yeah, yes. Exactly, breathe. Like, but apart from that, I'm a no to resolutions.
Yeah, I'm kind of a bit like you, Wendy. I think a bit of a mix of both. I like the idea of like a new fresh start, and I think it's nice to kind of set out things of what I'd like to achieve in the year, but I definitely think like hard and fast kind of resolutions, they don't work, do they? I think also, like, I'm sure we'll get into it more, but I hate January for the reason of like we are just bombarded with that like new year, new you diet diet culture messaging, and so for that reason I'm not a fan, because I think, like you said, like they just set people up to fail, don't they? And they're not great. So
yeah, I need to like still bask in my like pigs in blankets coma until at least the end of Jan. And I can, like, the best thing about New Year's resolutions, I think you can get a new notebook. Like, that's what I was hoping.
I'm so with you. It's all about the stationery. I'm in for the new stationery. I'm not in for the eating dust and not drinking wine.
I feel like the things like advent calendars and pigs in blankets, we need to kind of bring that, you know, carry that through into January, because those just bring us so much joy. Like, why are we having all the fun stuff in December? It's just, it's not fair, is it?
We need to get on the advent calendar January sales.
Let's do it. But some people like picking a word for the new year. What would yours be if you were to pick a word for 2025?
I've actually got mine. Oh. It's been my word of the year since I had my daughter, actually, surrender. and it's like my favorite word ever. So I'm going to say, like, stop trying to fight everything, yes. fight the chaos, just surrender. This is what's happening. Just try
How
and take.
How old is she?
She's nearly two and a half.
Oh, Christ. Well, surrender really is the word then. Surrender to the tantrums. Just
Lara's number one fan here.
I like, honestly, like, I'm obsessed. Like, I feel like no one prepares you for how much you love your best friend's kids. Like, she's just so special, honestly. She's literally like Lottie. She's just sunshine in human form. I witnessed the first meltdown, like toddler tantrum the other day.
Me or her?
Her. I witnessed her first tantrum and I was just like, oh no, Benny. You're in it. But no, she's just, yeah, she's a really special little girl.
So Laura, what would your word be?
Mine would be hope. Yeah, I think it's cheesy, isn't it? Oh god, I just made myself vomit a little bit in my mouth.
I love that.
But yeah I think just some things that I'm hoping that will like kind of come to fruition next year. And just I grew up with in like quite a negative household. And we've got negative, and I'm really trying not to be like, get myself out of negative mindset. I think that's my go-to, is to think the worst and to think negatively. And so I'm trying to not do that as much, not to be like, you know, toxic positivity or anything, but just to be a bit more positive and have hope.
Love
what's
that.
Yours, Alison?
Oh, I think mine's going to be confidence, because I just in the last few weeks have started a bit of a mission to try and regain some of my lost confidence, hence why I'm wearing red lipstick and leopard print today. Because I am just trying to kind of like force myself, drag myself out of a pit of lack of confidence. And what about you, Wendy? What would your word be?
Probably mindful, I think. A little bit more time spent in the moment rather than freaking out about what has been or might be, which I'm very good at.
Yeah.
So you touched, ladies, already on the big talking point for every January, which is obviously weight loss. And what I love about the content that you both put online is that you challenge these standards and you celebrate bodies. But that hasn't always been your attitude, has it? So can you tell us a little bit about the journey you've both been on to get here?
Yeah, so for me, like, I've always been big, like from the age of about 8, really. And I've tried every single diet you can imagine. If you name it, I've done it. When we moved from our flat about 8 years ago, I found, I think, like 10 Slimming World books in like the shit drawer that everyone has. So I was a serial dieter, never happy with my body, and just kind of made to feel like a lot of us, like I wasn't good enough and that I had to be on a diet and that I wasn't worthy as the size that I am. And then my life completely changed about 4 or 5 years ago. I was about to have bariatric surgery. It was a really huge operation, life-changing, where they basically like cut your stomach to like a much smaller size and then reroute around your intestines and all of this for sort of very drastic weight loss. And it's, as I say, it's major surgery, you can die from it. And I was 3 days away from having it and I just thought, what am I doing? And it was really at that point I started to think, do you know what, is my life that bad that I would put my sort of myself and my health and my life at risk? And what would life be like if I wasn't constantly on a diet and hating myself? And does that world and life exist? And then Bake Off happened, and I was really lucky. I got so much support from lots of women around the world who are also plus size, maybe struggling with their confidence. And I realised, you know, again, it was a time of COVID as well. So I just realised, like, quite crudely, I could be dead tomorrow. And how do I want to spend my last kind of days on earth worried about not having a thigh gap or that I don't fit into size 12 jeans or whatever? Or do I want to just live my life to the full? And I always say to people, like, don't live a small life just because you're bigger. And I think I now just really try and live by that motto, and the fact, you know, that the way we look is the least interesting thing about us. So I try, obviously not all the time, doesn't work all the time, but that's what I try and live by, really. And I'm so much happier for it.
Lottie, what about you?
Yeah, we've got very different journeys, but it's funny because there's like the turning point is quite similar in terms of, I don't want to say, like, but like the community side of things, like having our platforms is something that really has helped us both. For me, I had an eating disorder from around the age of 18. It sort of coincided, was a bit of a chicken and egg situation of what came first, the eating disorder or the IBS, because I became so fearful of food because everything would make me poorly. But obviously the eating disorder was making my IBS worse because, I mean, I was bulimic, so it was just ruining my gut health. So I was in this vicious circle, and I remembered I was always conscious of my body, like from, you know, school days, being in the PE changing rooms, looking at the girls that had boobs and a waist, and I still had like what my family call like my puppy fat. And I was always really conscious of that. And that sort of just became a really obsessive cycle. And in my sort of, yeah, late teens, early 20s, I also tried every diet. I remember I worked at TGI's and you could give baby food out for free. So I went on the baby food diet because Jennifer Aniston had done that. Like, oh, it was ridiculous. Like, and I'd eat, you know, four pots of baby food and two tins of Red Bull all day. I went on slimming tablets, and I'd used to put stones in my pockets to make myself heavier. So I'd go to these like dodgy slimming clinics to get these tablets that were basically speed to try and lose weight. And I just put myself in so many dangerous positions with my body, with my weight, and made my health, my gut health, even worse. And I think living with IBS and the constant bloating made it really difficult. And I know a lot of women that suffer with that find the same, because you can't, it's really hard to get a place of body acceptance when your body is always changing. Mm. So I could think, okay, this is how my body looks, I'm at peace with that. And 2 hours later, I can sniff a bit of pasta and I look totally different. So it's so hard. I think that it just makes the relationship with your body a little bit more complex. And I started actually in my Instagram. I did that without my name, without my face on there. It was, my husband always laughs because it was an awful name. And I basically took photos of my food and it looked like cat sick. It looked disgusting. But I started this platform sort of almost by accident as a diary for myself. And then accidentally fell upon this community of women that also struggled with their body image, also struggled with bloating, like both the physical side and the visual side, like appearance side. And I realized I wasn't alone. And I kind of did fake it till I make it in terms of confidence. I realized that these women needed help, and I wanted to help them, because even in a selfish way, it helped me too. So it was a really lovely thing to be able to have these conversations. And I really tried to make myself confident to help other people. And in the end, it actually got through to me and sort of rewired my neuro pathways to not hate myself. And it's become something that's grown from there.
That's amazing. Why do you think then that diet culture has got such a strong grip on so many people, but especially women?
I don't want to be like one of those people that are like the patriarchy, because
but it is.
It is though. It's a multi-billion dollar industry designed to make women feel bad about themselves. And actually, it's one of the only industries, really, when you look at it, that is actually designed for you to fail. They want you to fail because diets don't work. The scientific proof is that you will lose weight when you begin a diet, because, you know, for whatever reasons, it's the maintaining that is pretty much impossible unless you're 5% of the population. And I think what the chokehold that diet culture has on women is because we have been fed this lie that we are not good enough unless we are a certain size, and our worth is directly and inherently linked to our appearance. Mm. And I think that we feel that so much.
I think it's really important. The thing I always say when I talk to schools and when I've done coaching clients in the past is it's really important to get angry at diet culture. Yeah. Like, get angry at it, use that as fuel, and ask yourself why. So every time when you're thinking, I hate my body and I need to be smaller, why? Oh, because small equals pretty. Why do you think that? Because that's what the media has told us. Why? Because diet companies and diet culture want to profit off our insecurities. If we all said we like how we look, these businesses would lose, like you say, multi millions of pounds. It is such a high generating industry. And if we can get angry at that and question, it's like, actually, like, I don't understand it as well. Like, but, you know, it was used to make women shut up and keep us interested when we were housewives, and to keep us small and not to talk about our opinions or anything that we felt passionate and was important, it was to keep us in, to keep the women at home, keep them just obsessing about their bodies and serving men, pretty much. Basically, that's what it was for. Yeah.
But at risk of getting kicked off of our own podcast by you two,
we're so angry.
I want to talk about the other side of that, because there is a balance to be created, and I feel like sometimes there are some health benefits. And I, for example, was pre-diabetic and had to lose some weight because I didn't want to be diabetic. But then someone who's lost weight can feel shamed now, because you're supposed to be positive about your body however you look. So how do we navigate that flip side where there are people who are losing weight? And I understand the diet culture and how we do that can be really challenging. Mm-hmm. But there are sorts of guilt and shame being raised by weight loss now. And I wonder how what you have to say on that side of it.
I think there's a big difference. Diet culture, diet industries don't care about you, and they don't care about health. They care about profiting off your insecurities. And I think that if someone is losing weight for themselves, for whatever reason, that's okay. Mm. It's when we're losing weight because we feel that we have to look a certain way because of the media and all this toxicity that we've been fed from pretty much the day we were born. That's when it's a problem. So I think it's a really hard line that both of us struggle with, isn't
it? Yeah, it is hard. And I get accused of promoting obesity on pretty much a daily basis.
Oh, I can well imagine.
And I think that, you know, it's something that I feel really passionate about talking about, because I am just existing. And actually, I think I'm not standing around with a billboard saying eat McDonald's every day, eat 40 donuts a day. I think you're right. I think there is a balance to be had. And I think it's completely an individual's choice. If you want to lose weight for whatever reason, I have no judgment there. What I personally just don't want to see is it plastered all over the internet. I think we sort of feel like sometimes that losing weight is the best thing that you can ever do, and it's really celebrated. And like, I think I'm just not really about that. Like, I think for me, the goal is health. So if you have lost weight and you feel healthier, I'm really happy for you. I think that's brilliant. I think we should all be trying to be the healthiest version of ourselves. But it's like we always say, like, sometimes, like, you know, some food is good for you, like your heart, your brain, your lungs, and some food is good for the soul. And it's not about having, just not maybe like beating yourself up for how you look and what your body is like. And just know as well that we're all different. Like, we're all... like, you had to lose weight, really, like you said, for like medical reasons. Some people are just naturally, you know, in bigger bodies. Some people are smaller. And I think what we're just kind of saying is that's okay. Your appearance and your weight are not equal to your worth. And actually, you know, we're as anti skinny shaming as we are like fat shaming.
Yeah. There's one thing that's always stuck with me. I think it was Vic Spence, a friend who's also a confidence coach, shared before, and she said, if somebody says to you, oh, I've lost 2 stone, where I'm saying, oh, that's amazing, saying, oh, okay, and are you happy? And if they say yes, then amazing, like, brilliant. But actually,
well, do you feel better? Do you feel healthier? Do you feel well?
And you realize, actually, I was chasing this dream that wasn't, or you could lose it in like yourself and then feel happier and healthier. So it's about how you feel and what that sort of motivation for yourself was. And if that brings you like true happiness and health, then brilliant. But if you're chasing after this, when I'm smaller, I know I've been the smallest I ever was. I was the least healthy I've ever been. I could barely walk a mile, never mind run the marathons that I've now done since gaining weight. So it's just about, it's a really hard balance. And I think it's something that we find really hard, and probably most women do, because there isn't anything wrong with losing weight. It's just there's something wrong with people making you feel like you should for your appearance.
Yeah. And I think I always say to people, like, again, you were saying about going back to the why. Mm. Like, why do you want to lose weight? Oh, because I want to, you know, because whatever reason. But actually, like, how many times have we've all done it where we've gone on a diet and then you weigh yourself and you, like, you've only lost a pound, but you feel better. You've got more energy. Maybe your skin's clear or whatever. And you go, oh, fuck it, because you've only lost a pound. So actually, when we focus on weight, it's really detrimental. So I think we just all need to focus on it. It's about how you feel.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, personally, I am firmly anti-diet, but I feel like weight loss and dieting is one of those things that It's like one of the biggest blind spots that so many intelligent, critical thinking women have. I've got friends who will discuss the ins and outs of politics, but they still weigh themselves every day. Do you think that if someone listening has a friend like that, is it good to challenge those people when they start talking about their diet or weighing themselves? And if so, how should we do it without upsetting them or shaming them?
I think it comes down to whether you've got the mental energy and the strength to do that. If you're in a place to, then, you know, go for it. And if you've got that relationship with them where you think something positive can come out of it, but if it's just going to cause you sort of more mental load and put you back into a triggered place, then you've got to sort of weigh it up as you go. You can steer, you know, there's so many different ways you can challenge it and sort of do that, you know, sort of why I was saying, like, but why? You can sort of get angry at the reason why together, or you can try and just set a boundary and say, do you know what? I don't feel comfortable talking about weight or body image right now, and I'd like us to change the subject, please. Like, you know, we've posted stuff before, I think, on our joint channels of, like, Christmas, when your nan starts talking about calories and going, should you really be having your third portion? And whether you actually tell her where to go or whether you say, do you know what, nan, I'm not interested in that. So I think it sort of depends on your situation, your relationship, where you are at the time.
Yeah, definitely. No, I agree. Setting healthy boundaries with family, I think, is really important as well. We'll say, like, my family know now, do not comment on my weight. And actually all the research I did for my book showed that weight stigma actually has more of an impact on somebody's health than excess weight.
That's crazy.
It's the mental load, and that's why we shouldn't be talking to kids about weight and issues and stuff like that, because it just, I'm an actual, like, living, walking, breathing example of, you know, growing up in a household where it was, you need to lose weight, and it just made me go the other way.
I always remember my grandma called me buxom once, and it stuck with me for years, and it just triggered my eating disorder.
But I think we all have a thing. I had an uncle who was like, oh, you've packed it on. And it's like that it was just a comment that he will certainly not remember. But they stay with you, don't they? Absolutely.
Yeah. At the dinner table last night, I've got 6-year-old twins and a 14-year-old. And one of my 6-year-old twins made a comment about her twin, about how she was fat. And my 14-year-old was like, oh, it was the worst thing in the world. Oh, you can't say that. And I kind of thought quickly and I said, you know, fat's not a bad thing. That's just like saying that she's tall or that she's small. You know, it's just a descriptive word. So that's not a bad thing. But she's not fat. And my 14-year-old was kind of like thinking about it. And I was like, phew, I feel like I navigated that one quite well.
Well done, you.
It can be so hard, though.
If anyone is sort of struggling with that, I would really recommend a book by an author called Molly Forbes called Body Happy Kids. And it sort of talks all about how to talk to your kids in a sort of body neutral way, to raise kids so that they know that exercise is for play and for fun, not just burning calories like we were sort of taught to. But it's an amazing book. But yeah, it sounds like you did a really good job. I always try and say, like, fat is not a dirty word. Like, it's a descriptive word, just like
it's
brunette.
It's a descriptive word, absolutely. Yeah. Molly is one of my closest friends, so I have learned a lot from her books. But we hear phrases like body positivity used a lot, but some people kind of find it really hard to love their body. Do you think that body neutrality is a more helpful goal, or do you think that, you know, we could all love our bodies?
Should I take this one?
I'm itching. You go.
So I think we get sold this lie that we have to love our bodies. It's rubbish. I promise you, you don't have to love your body every day. It's not realistic. It's not attainable. So please, I would say, don't focus on that goal. If you get there, amazing. But please don't set that as a goal. It's also going to be very difficult to go from, I hate my body, I don't like how I look in the mirror, to, I love myself, I love my rolls, I love my stretch marks, my cellulite. It's a big order, right? The body positivity movement was actually, a bit of history for you here. Sorry, this is boring, let me know. No, but it was actually a political movement in the 60s, and it was about equal rights for Black, queer, disabled women. It wasn't about loving your skin or like loving who you are. It got commercialized in the 90s and hijacked by companies that, a little bit like diet culture perhaps you could say, kind of then thought, right, there's money to be made here on like getting women to like love themselves. but it kind of got whitewashed. And then what we were seeing is women in more privileged bodies, in smaller bodies, with their roles and in sort of inverted commas, showing off their sort of flabby stomachs or whatever and saying, like, I love it. It's not really about that. And I think for me, I'd say I don't really identify anymore with the body positivity movement. And I think a lot of people don't. For me, I think body neutrality, which is in essence what we were saying earlier, is the way you look is the least interesting thing about you. And focusing on function over form is the way forward. It's basically saying I have a body and so does everybody else.
But the shape of our bodies and fashion are also really closely linked. And you guys always look amazing in your outfit online. What would you say to someone who's kind of covering up in leggings and baggy clothes and doesn't have the confidence to dress how they want to or to kind of experiment with clothes because of their shape?
I think women's bodies are not trends. Like we've all, you know, we've seen the trends like from like the 1920s or up until now, you know, and unfortunately this whole heroin chic thing is back in. But I think you just need to ignore those completely. And
I also just say, since when did eyebrows get their own trends?
So many. And I look back at like freckles. I used to try and like scrub my freckles off, and now we're paying £15 for a freckle pen. Like, we look at all these things of insecurities and how our bodies are, like, you know, how we look, our appearance is just treated as a trend. Like, there's Alex Light, she's a brilliant follow. She's done a piece where she's great, isn't she? And she's put her body and like edited it as if it was in line with the trend. So, you know, like Laura said, the heroin
chic
back in the
90s.
Mm. Yeah. That's it. And then suddenly the Kardashians with the big bum. And I talk to the kids and I say, if we were to try and get ourselves in that shape, one, it would be impossible without a shitload of surgery, which is dangerous, expensive, and all the other things. But two, it'd get to the end of that decade and it's like, oh, actually, no, that's not, big bum's not in fashion anymore.
Big bum's back in.
Oh, right, okay, what do I do with my BBL? Like, what do I do? I've just spent, you know, every hour at the gym. It's like, it's really hard. And then when clothes, you know, we look back to the sort of, we always talk back about the noughties, the, you know, those shows that we grew up with, the 10 years younger and stuff like that.
Not to wear.
To wear, like, how you're not allowed to wear vertical stripes, how you can only wear black.
And the wafy look, the kind of Kate Moss, where you had to look like an ironing board.
That's it. And we look back and think, God, actually, why don't we just wear what makes us feel good, like physically and mentally? Like, if it's comfortable and it gives us confidence, then surely that's the best trend, like without being cheesy.
No, I agree. I think you're really great at, and like, you're such an advocate for dressing for joy. It's like, you love to wear like colour, like Penny is your style inspiration, isn't she?
She does have
the best wardrobe. And I think that's really great. And I would say to anyone that is struggling, thinking that their shape is wrong, like, your body isn't wrong. I think it's just about trying different things and pushing yourself out of your comfort zone, even if it's just a little bit, to try things that maybe you wouldn't. Maybe also just, and I think exploring colour as well. I'm someone that also
used to
live in.
This is what Alison has been doing clothes of late.
Yeah.
Have you not?
Yeah. Well, I've been trying to wear more colour, less black. I've been shopping my own wardrobe to try and, you know, delve into it and find things that I've forgotten about. But my main thing is, I would rather, this is like a mantra that I'm telling myself on a daily basis, I would rather look fat and fabulous than slimmer and boring. And I'm just trying to, like, today I'm wearing dungarees that they're really slim fitting. And you can see, like, I'm going to stand up so you can see it, ladies. But like,
yes, it's well.
Yes.
I've got money in them. And I'm like, I don't care that everyone can see my big size 18, 20 tummy. I'm just going to wear them because they make me feel happy. So I'm with you on that front.
Yeah, there's a really great exercise that Laura Thomas, she has got an excellent book called Just Eat It. She's, I think it's a food psychologist, but she developed something called the Zero Crap Day, which I love doing. It's like, if you woke up one morning and didn't give a crap about what other people thought of you, if you had no judgment on yourself, what would you do? And you go through what you'd eat. But I love the what would you wear? And just imagine that. And like, Alison, like you say, like you said earlier, I've put red lipstick on, I'm wearing leopard print and dungarees. Like, try and imagine that zero craps Alison, and just bring in something, even if that's a pair of jeans, if you're living in leggings and a hoodie, and just like push yourself to do that, like once a week, wear something from your zero craps persona And you'll see the joy and you'll realise, actually, people aren't looking at me and staring at me. If anything, they're maybe thinking, oh, she looks fab. And that it's like training yourself, and you will eventually find that style that just makes you feel good.
Definitely.
I think I was going to ask you a question about shapewear, which is, let's face it, the devil. But I think, actually, I know what you're going to say already. You're going to say we should chuck it all in the bin, aren't you?
Yeah.
It makes me shit myself.
It
actually makes you shit yourself.
Oh, I don't know if I should share this or not.
Yeah, which shit yourself? You've shat yourself a lot of times, Laura, so what one are you planning on sharing?
This is a safe space, Laura. It's a safe space.
I was at my friend's wedding and I had like kind of like a tighter fitting dress on. You remember when there was like, is it peplum dresses? Like the
going in now, yeah.
Anyway, I was wearing one of those and I had some like really awful dodgy shapewear from Primark on that was like four sizes too small because Primark don't do plus sizes. And let's just say it was not a great evening.
Yeah.
It was so tight. I just think I was too short to be comfortable.
I've always ended up throwing mine in the tampon bin. I remember going clubbing.
We've all done it.
Yeah, cram it in and then you just have your fanny out and you may as well have just worn your nice bit Bridget Jones. Like
Annie, who used to be on this podcast with me, on her wedding day, came up to me and said, come to the toilet. And she was like, get me out of these pants. And it took both of us to get her out of the pants and put them in the bin on her wedding day. So sorry, Annie, for mentioning that.
Chub Rob shorts, though, amazing because they stop chafing and they have a slight smoothing effect, but they're not restrictive.
Yeah, I think it's different to feel some support, isn't it? It's nice, especially if you've got a bit of a tummy. Yeah. Feeling like you've got a bit of a hug is very different to, like, you know, when you're moving and you don't want it, like, wobbling anywhere just because it doesn't feel nice. Or, like, it's, you know, I'm sitting down now and my tummy's, like, quite literally touching my fanny, but it feels nice to have that bit of support, but that's very different to crushing my internal intestine.
So true. That's so true. I'm gonna try and raise the tone again, ladies.
Bring it back down.
When we say that something is flattering, we often means that it makes part of your body look smaller. You know, people will say, "Oh, that dress looks amazing on you," and I'm thinking, I know why you're saying that. Do you think we almost need to redefine what flattering means?
Yeah, I do a series on this on Instagram and it's called F Flattering, basically, because we do, like, flattering, I guess, isn't a bad word, but it's been used in a way where it does basically mean that it's smaller, whereas we can, you look thinner. Like, you say, oh, that's so flattering on you, basically means you look slimmer and slimmer is the body ideal.
Yeah.
Like, so challenging that or redefining, I love that some people in comments say, do you know what? I don't think of flattering as that. I think of it as the colour really, you know, brings out my personality. It suits who I am. And I think that's amazing. So if we can give it a new definition, then great. But I think it's the whole sort of Trini and Susanna days of it's not flattering to wear vertical stripes if you're above a size 6 or something like that. That's where it's sort of got a bad reputation, hasn't it?
Yeah, I completely agree.
You said recently, Laura, you posted a video that you were having a bad body image day. So you obviously still get those little voices giving you a thump in the back of the head. How do you tackle it? What do you do on a bad body image day?
I think sometimes I sort of lean into it a little bit and I kind of just have to say, I'm just having a bad day. That's just, we all do, we all get them. I think it's important sort of to say that the road to body acceptance isn't linear. Like, we're all going to have good and bad days, but I just try and tell myself that I'm like more than my bad days and that this too shall pass. It's a bit like when you're having a mental health wobble. Really hard when you're in it, isn't it, to kind of get out of it or think that you're not always going to feel like that. But for me, a bit of self-care, like, sounds really, really simple and it sounds a bit superficial, but literally just shower, hair wash, shaving legs, fanny, face, whatever I need to do, bit of fake tan, and not kind of like, I think sometimes the temptation is to kind of put on your old clothes with holes in or stains on them and sit on the sofa with your greasy hair and feel sorry for yourself. And that's fine to do that maybe sometimes, but also I think sometimes I just try and get myself out of it and make myself feel a little bit better. And then I just find that over time, maybe if it's not that day, maybe it's the day after or the day after that, I then start to be a bit kinder to myself and not beat myself up so much.
Yeah, realise that your thoughts aren't facts.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, obviously, you're both big on social media and you put out really helpful content. But we also know that social media is a big part of the problem with promoting this idealised, perfect lifestyle. And we've got teenagers soaking this stuff up too. What advice do you have for parents listening about what conversations to have with our kids? I mean, obviously, you've mentioned Molly Forbes' book, Body Happy Kids, already. But in terms of having that conversation about body image and trying to ensure that the next generations are growing up having a better relationship with their bodies?
Yeah, I think for me, one thing, my daughter's only two, but I also work in the schools as well, and trying to be aware of your own language. Like, I think most women our generation grew up with mums that are permanently on diets who, you know, we can't blame them because unfortunately they are just a victim of the diet culture too, but always on Slimming World, always on the next, you know, 5-2 diet. So not talking about that, talking about food for pleasure, for health, for all the other benefits that it's got, same with exercise, just being really aware of our language from the very beginning, you know, not so they're not seeing us prod at our tummies and the bits that we don't like, I think is will actually have a really, really positive effect, because we do, you know, we can't protect them forever. And unfortunately, with social media, as much as there's so many positives to it, we know that it's a really scary place. We know, especially even things of AI coming in, the AI models and
filters and all sorts.
It's,
well, Alison and I have both got teenage daughters, and, you know, my daughter's just starting the changes in her body that come with puberty, and currently she's utterly nonplussed by all of it, which is marvellous. But it's really hard with grandparents, I find, because they are the generation, our parents, you're talking about, who were constantly on a diet, and they still are to an extent, and they're still talking about, oh, well, I'm going to do 800 calories for the next couple of weeks before Christmas so that I can then eat everything I want at Christmas. And it's like, don't say that in front of my 13-year-old, please. Yeah. And we as parents now are trying to have conversations, like you say, about health and about movement for your mental health and movement for other things. But do you think the next generation will have a different attitude to self-esteem? Are you positive that all this work you're doing in schools, Lottie, is going to pay off and that they will have more self-love than we have?
Yeah, it's such a hard one because when I go into schools, I see that the young people now influence at a much younger age. You know, I was still wearing no makeup except blue eyeshadow and not caring what I looked like until a bit older, because we didn't have social media. We had all the horrible magazines, don't get me wrong, but now it is really scary. So I see that, and I see how many students need me to be there, which breaks my heart because I wish I could go in and they go, oh, do you know what, we don't need this, but they really need it, and they stop and they come over and talk about it. But I also see the conversations when I do go in, that's not the first chat they've had about it. Teachers now are talking more openly. They're doing so many positive things for young people's mental health, including body image and self-esteem generally. I have this like high hope that, you know, especially by the age, even just selfishly by the age that Penny, my little girl, is in her teens, that we almost do a bit of a go backwards with social media. And we're seeing the damage now that it's done. Like, we were like sort of the first generation to properly use it. We didn't grow up with it, thank God, but we've used it in our sort of 20s. And now we've learned about it and realised how powerful it is. I feel like we're now starting to see how it can be used wrongly, and kids are hopefully getting a little bit more aware of that. We're getting more information. I really hope that there's some more laws, like we've seen it in, I think it's Sweden that has just made it illegal.
Australia
has just made it illegal for under 16s. And I know there's loads of different schools of thought on that. But I do hope that sort of, you know, institutions are taking more ownership of things, like metal, or taking more ownership. I hope that that'll become something that, you know, we can take positives from. But it's scary. Like, I don't know the answers. I do this, you know, we talk about this day in, day out. I go to schools all the time and I don't know the answer. But I so hope that we're going to be in a better place.
I feel like I'm taking you from a potentially positive place to a negative place again, so I apologise for that. But it feels like with the rise in popularity of Ozempic and similar weight loss drugs. It feels like we are being offered a quick fix that is potentially, you know, and again, it's, you know, arguably a massive industry making money off the back of our insecurities. Is that something that you find worrying? And do you think that, how much impact do you think that's going to have on us and our ability to accept our bodies the way they are rather than try to fight to change our bodies?
I think it's a tough one. I think it goes back to what we were saying earlier about it being an individual choice. I have absolutely no, opinions really on people pursuing the weight loss injections for their own use. I think what we need to be a little bit careful is when we talk about them as a miracle cure, because in essence, so what they do is the GLP-1 hormone suppresses your appetite and it also slows the release of food. So you feel fuller for longer. So in theory, you eat less and you lose weight. But just like a fad diet, when you stop taking them, you put the weight back on and more. And at the moment, they're only licensed for use up to 2 years. That may change, but I just think it's a little bit careless to describe them as a miracle cure. However, I will say that I know that friends that have been on them and say that for the first time, the food noise, as in constantly wanting
to eat. That's how I've heard them described as well, that they turn down the noise on the kind of obsession with food.
Yeah. And I think that unless you are somebody who, like myself included, who has struggled with having like an insatiable appetite and really struggled with kind of, you know, not eating to excess or whatever, and disordered eating added into that, I can see how they're really appealing, and I don't think they should be demonized. So I think they can be a lifeline for some people. Again, I think it's an individual basis, and it's kind of early days. I just think we need to be a bit careful how we report on them and how the media has reported on them, because I don't think they're a miracle cure. I do think for some
people,
they aren't
as bad, maybe, as they're being made, because they're being demonised at the moment. They're somewhere in the middle, perhaps.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that the only thing I think worries me is that I think a lot of people are seeing them, and then people that don't need them, it's a bit like, you know, what you were saying about putting stones in your pocket so that you weighed more.
How you're using them.
It's about being responsible with them as well. So they're not for people that have got, you know, that 10 pounds to lose, whatever. They're not for people like that.
Your story's coming from Hollywood, don't we? And, you know, who knows? Because we don't know what celebrities are eating and how much exercise they're doing and what they're doing with their bodies. But there are rumours that, you know, loads of celebrities are taking these weight loss drugs.
Yeah.
And arguably, they don't need to be doing that.
Well, I was at a fitness conference, like a wellness and fitness conference in the summer, and there was an American presenter there. She was discussing the global wellness trends. Mm. And she said, can I just ask for a show of hands for anybody who's tried any of the weight loss drugs or is on them? And kind of, I think, two or three people put up their hands. And she said, I asked this at a conference in California last week, and there was about three people in the room who didn't put up their hands.
Wow. Yeah.
So that's how much they're being taken in the US now. And so you're right, Alison, they're coming here, definitely, in a big way.
I think so. And I think that for some people, they probably, you know, it might be right for them. They are extremely expensive as well. I think that's another thing to consider. And the NHS, I believe, has plans to roll them out to some people, but it'll be a postcode lottery like everything over the next 10 years. But you're looking at kind of £200-300 a month. So they're not for everybody. And I worry that people are putting themselves in like financial danger.
It's similar to how you talked about bariatric surgery, that you've got the surgery, but if it's not addressing the food noise is very different, but if it's not addressing the emotional side, which so many of us have when it comes to food, when it comes to dieting, then it is how it's being used is worrying, and the accessibility of it.
I've said it for years. I think I really wish the government and the NHS would prioritise focusing on the emotional reasons or like why we eat and having support for that, rather than, you know, how many calories you should eat in a day or
calories on menus,
BMI, and all of that bollocks.
Yeah. Or sending GP surgery, sending their patients to Slimming World. I get, I think, once a year, I get a text from my GP surgery saying you can have some free Slimming World sessions, and I always write back an angry text telling them about diet culture.
No, that shouldn't happen. They cause disordered eating. I really truly believe that. I truly in my heart believe that weight loss companies like that, they cause disordered eating. I feel really strongly about it. They make me so angry. Sorry.
Lottie and Laura, the work that you are doing is so valuable, and it's helping so many people out there. So from the bottom of my heart, thank you. And thank you so much for joining us today. It has been wonderful to chat to you. Ladies, tell me about the show that you are coming to London Palladium. It's same dress, different bodies, isn't it? Tell us about that.
Yeah, so we are putting on an amazing show at London Palladium. We're so excited, aren't we?
Yeah.
And it's like the ultimate.
Massive, ladies.
I know, right?
Don't tell us that. We're trying to.
Why? Tiny.
Alison and I will be in the front row, like,
ha! It's going to be like the ultimate girls like that, except it's in the afternoon, so that you'll be home in your pyjamas eating a takeaway by 7 o'clock. Like, happy days. But it's all about like fashion and body confidence, dressing for joy, saying a big FU to flattering. But it's so much more than just like fashion, isn't it? So we've got like some really special guests, and we'll be talking about like both of our journeys in a bit more detail. It's just gonna be a really uplifting and empowering event.
Yeah, we do something on Instagram called Same Dress, Different Bodies, which is where it's come from, and we show that, you know, the same dress can look amazing on us both, or there's some things that, you know, just feel more me or feel more Laura. It's not to do with our size, and it's all about like style has no size. So we bring that to life. We did our pilot show in June, and we basically have women all different shapes, different sizes, all different ages, and they're on the catwalk and they're just sharing how incredible they all feel in their outfits. And we just always, we really hoped that time, and I think we did it, and this time even more so, that everyone in that audience can look and think, oh, that's me on that stage, or that part's me, and they can really relate and go, I would never have the confidence to wear that, but they look amazing, and you can tell they feel amazing. So that's what we really want to, we want everyone to walk out just feeling like happy to be a woman, happy to be in their bodies, and just feel really empowered. So we're bringing that big one better.
Love it. Thank you so much, ladies. It has been fabulous to talk to you.
Thank you so much.
Don't forget, you can get in touch with us on all social channels, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. Just type in NetMums and you'll find us. And if you liked what you've heard today, we'd love for you to give us a 5-star rating, press the follow button, and share the podcast on all your socials.